Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
I quite like the number of apps that are already available.
Tech Guide.
The iPad 2 still beats just about everything on the market. The new iPad has just kicked away even further.
Tech Guide.
I quite enjoyed using it. Great design. The operating system worked hand in hand with the hardware as well.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is obviously a hot-selling device.
Tech Guide.
You know, we want them to be light. We want them to be portable. And this one's very fast with i7 and i5 processors.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
As it says on the packaging, this is Tech Guide, Episode 4. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. I'm Stephen Fenwick, editor of techguide.com.au. And on this week's show, we'll take a look at the smartphone and tablet boom and its effect on online sports betting. We'll also chat about the Nike Plus finally arriving on the Android platform and also have a look at the availability of the Huawei Ascend P1 smartphone. Our reviews this week will include Kogan's sub-$200 Agora Android tablet. We'll also check out HTC's new One XL 4G smartphone. And also look at a great way to organise your cable clutter. In this week's interview, we'll speak with McAfee's Michael Sentonas about the DNS changer malware and the internet doomsday. And we'll answer all your questions in the Tech Guide help desk.
Now, a Tech Guide news update.
Well, sports betting is on the rise, and one of the reasons it's on the rise is because of the boom in smartphones and tablet adoptions. There's been some interesting research. A report from Juniper Research has found that the increase in spending, the report said that more than $13 billion in bets, including more than $3 billion in the UK, where the report originated, were placed via mobile devices worldwide in 2011. That's smartphones and tablets. And that figure is expected to reach a massive $45 billion by 2017. So it's just adding the convenience of sports betting that we're constantly bombarded on TV. There's Sportsbet, Tom Waterhouse, all these betting agencies that are offering easy access to their services via apps on the mobile and on the smartphone. So is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Well, people seem to be responding. We're, as Australians, we obviously love our sport and we also love to have a bet. And our mobiles and smartphones are facilitating that ability. So I'm sure Centrebet, Sportingbet, all these other companies, Tom Waterhouse is saturating TV advertising, especially during Wimbledon. Every ad break had a TomWaterhouse.com ad and him showing his iPad app and the ability to place bets on the go. So it's an interesting one for bettors out there. Like you know, we're a nation of punters, as I said. But is this a good idea? I'm a bit split on the issue. I think that I only have a bet myself every now and again, maybe during Origin time, maybe Melbourne Cup day. But could this lead to problem gambling? I'm not sure. The fact that it's so easy to gamble now, and of course they ask everyone to gamble responsibly. The fact that it's now literally at your fingertips on a mobile phone, or now on an iPad or an Android tablet, can make that temptation for a lot of people too hard to resist. So you'll be able to read even more about that at techguide.com.au.
This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Well, a very popular app and application for Apple users, especially on the iPhone, is the Nike Plus application. Now, this originated a few years ago, where the iPod Nano supported the Nike Plus technology. There was a little module that fits in every Nike running shoe that allowed the calibration of your run, you know, the distance you run, that used to keep the time, and it used to then talk wirelessly to the iPod Nano via a small module, a wireless module that used to fit in the bottom of the device. There's been a fair bit of development in technology of late, and that's that also then came to the iPhone without the need for the module, because the iPhone had GPS and other things built into it. But It's come all the way around now to be available for Android users, which is really good news for the growing number of Android users out there who we often see apps that hit the iPhone and iPod first, because that seems to be the benchmark for a lot of developers. I get asked all the time, why is it you talk about iPhone and iPad apps all the time? Answer to that is developers hit that platform first. They think that that's the easiest platform to develop for. The App Store is really well run, and apps are very thoroughly tested before they're let out of the App Store for people to download. So a lot of developers are using that as their first base, their first stop, and then thereby developing the Android app as their second option. But now with the increase of the number of Android users, there's a lot of developers that are considering Android either quicker or first up rather than hitting the iPhone and iPod iOS platform. Now, in this case, the Nike Plus running app has now been launched for Android smartphone users, so they can now join the world's largest running club. Now, the app records all your information of your run, your distance, your average speed, your speed per kilometer, and all of that information can then be uploaded to NikePlus.com, the website where it collects all that information and allows you to then examine your progress of your training. It also can issue challenges, and maybe you look through the app, it might challenge you to try to run your fastest 5Ks, or put you to challenge your friends. But with the new Android version of Nike Plus also integrates Facebook. So you can now share your runs on Facebook and also Twitter for that matter too. So it's a lot more interactive. You can share the results of your run, how far you've gone. You'll probably see, you've already see these possibly in your Facebook feed already, people letting everyone else know that they've been exercising. Now, it's going to increase. The Nike Plus running app is coming to Android as well, and there'll be a full report about that at techguide.com.au. Well, a relative newcomer on the smartphone market in Australia is a company called Huawei. They're a Chinese company, and what they've done, they've developed a smartphone called the Ascend P1. Now, this was announced some months ago, the fact that the smartphone was hitting the market, and at the time was one of the first quad-core smartphones. I think it was announced during the Consumer Electronics Show back in January, which the CES show was held in Vegas. And I remember writing this story actually back in January on Tech Guide, the fact that this is their first real effort in the smartphone market. But we haven't seen it for quite a while. It's come around to July and no sign of the Ascend P1. But there was news late last week that the smartphone will be available in Australia for an outright purchase. So rather than it being sold through the carriers on a plan, you can now purchase the Ascend P1 outright. And it's very competitively priced too, at $499. Now, just tell you a little bit about the device itself. It is, at the time, I think it might even still be, one of the thinnest smartphones on the market. It's just 7.69 millimeters thick and only weighs 110 grams. Now, this is running Android 4.0 Ice Cream Sandwich, the very latest operating system from Google. It's also got a 4.3-inch Super AMOLED touchscreen. And it's also got a dual-core 1.5 gigahertz processor as well. So very easy for multitasking, also for faster gameplay and video playback as well. On that great screen, your videos and pictures look pretty attractive. It's also got a built-in 8-megapixel camera with dual flash, autofocus, and it can also capture full HD video at 1080p. So pretty attractive package. Now, it's obviously no Samsung Galaxy S3 or HTC One XL, which we're going to actually talk about later in the show. But if you're looking for an attractively priced product and you don't want to follow a plan, you can either buy the Ascend P1. It's available, by the way, exclusively through Dick Smith. So you can buy the Ascend P1 and then insert your own SIM card, or perhaps maybe a budget SIM card, maybe an Amazim SIM card if you want to control your monthly spend. Amaysim, we mentioned in last week's program, have a $19.90 plan, which offers pretty competitive pricing. I think 9 cents per call or text message offers about $220 worth of value, plus some data thrown in as well. So if maybe you want to buy your child who's starting high school, maybe a smartphone, the Ascend P1 may be the product for you. So check it out. There's a report on Tech Guide. It's priced at $4.99 and available through Dick Smith.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
Well, Kogan has released the Agora Android tablet. Now, the Agora 10.1 is a 10.1-inch screen. And it was announced a few weeks ago. I reported this on Tech Guide, also spoke about it on the radio, and it caused quite a stir because not only, as we know, Kogan, very competitively priced online retailer. Now, they're offering the Agora 10.1-inch, and it's running Android 4.0, I should add, so the very latest version of Android. But it's also offering on the site for less than $200. So immediately, people jumped onto the Kogan website and were ordering this, they were ordering it so quickly that the pre-orders actually sold out. So I think at the moment there's been delays until August. So if you order now, you won't get your order until about mid-August. That's about another month away. So, but we brought it into the Tech Guide offices and decided to give it a review. Now we asked the question: just how good would a sub $200 tablet be? And the answer to that question is that the Agora actually stacks up to offer a decent value for the money. I think pound for pound, dollar for dollar, you're getting a decent product here. There's a lot of Android tablets on the market already, similar size that cost twice as much. I think what a lot of companies made the mistake of doing is offering Android tablets, and there are a lot of them out there, offering Android tablets at the same entry-level price as the iPad, around $539. Now, I think there's a lot of people, and as we know, iPad is the runaway leader in this category. They've got quite a large percentage of market share. I think it's up in the 60% mark. So if you're going head-to-head with the iPad, the numbers already show that you're going to lose because iPad's got the majority of the market share. So, but yet companies persisted in offering these tablets for over $500. So along comes Kogan with the Agora 10.1, and it's a pretty decent device, stacked full of features. Now it's I'm not going to sit to tell you it's the best Android tablet on the market. Far from it. But for the money you're paying, for the value you're getting, I think you get a lot of bang for your buck. Now let's start off with the screen. It's got a nice 10.1-inch screen, similar size to the iPad and a lot of other Android devices on the market. Really nice and sharp, very clear, easy way to navigate. Of course, it's the full touch screen operation, so you can scroll through your pages, access your apps, browse the web, check your emails, and also view your multimedia content, which I think is probably one of the better features of the Android tablet, the Agora tablet, is its ability to play back movies and videos. What it also has too, that not many other tablets can boast, including the iPad, is a huge number of connectivity ports. There's a HDMI out, there's mini USB. So there's all down on the right-hand side of the device, and they're all clearly labeled, so you can easily find them. It's got built-in Bluetooth, so there's plenty of connectivity. So I think it's got a micro SD slot to get data on and off. It's even got, I think I mentioned already, the micro USB, HDMI out, so you can put whatever's showing on the Kogan screen onto your flat-screen TV. But as a tablet, the design, it's doesn't quite have the quality and finish of the iPad, although it's far from being a really cheap looking device. It's got a plastic back, but for the amount of money you're paying, the build quality is there. The downside of this product is the processor. I think that it's only got a single core processor. It's got a 1 gig ARM V7 processor. It's got a gigabyte of RAM. But with this slower processor, it's very hard to do things like multitasking. The response, even typing, there was a half a second delay seeing the letters appear on the screen. So not really good if you're going to use this for a high productivity device. My suggestion is it'd make a great first tablet for people who want to just dip their toe in the tablet market without spending too much money, or even a great gift for a child. Maybe want to view multimedia content on the go, maybe in the back of the car on a road trip. So it has got plenty of things going for it. Of course, it can also access the Google Play Store, so you can access all your favorite apps. Although those faster games, games like Fruit Ninja, where there's a lot of fast action involved, you may find there's a little bit of lag with the single core processor. Another thing too, the battery was not up to the advertised 8-hour life. I think we ran it for about, I think the best we got was about 4.5 to 5 hours running time, and that's just casual use with Wi-Fi turned on. It's Wi-Fi only, no 3G involved. The camera, there is a front and rear facing camera. Pictures aren't the best quality. I wouldn't buy this to use it as a camera, although the front facing camera does come in handy if you want to make some Skype video calls, and the rear camera is just handy if you want to just snap a quick photo, but your smartphone will probably take more calls. So that's the Kogan Agora 10.1. It's priced at $179 for the 8-gig model, $199 for the 16-gig model, and I gave it 3.5 stars out of 5. There's a full review on Tech Guide if you're interested in having a read of that. But, if you're like I said, if you're after a tablet that offers pretty good value, then the Kogan Agora certainly fits the bill. Now, early we mentioned the smartphone, the HTC One XL. We did mention earlier too the Huawei Ascend P1. But we had reviewed earlier this week on the Tech Guide website is HTC's latest effort. They seem to be releasing phones quite often now, our good friends at HTC. But their One series, which was announced back in February in Barcelona, is their new sort of flagship series of phones. We've already reviewed the One X already on Tech Guide. That was the white phone that was the first quad core processor in Australia. We reviewed that some time ago. That review is also on the Tech Guide website. But this time out, we were looking at the One XL. Now, this is identical in almost every way with the One X, apart from the color of the device. This new Telstra version is a dark gray color. Same specs, 8.6 millimeter thickness, same weight, with a couple of differences. And the main one being that this is a 4G product. This works on Telstra's 4G network, and as we know, the 4G network is growing. It's already present around capital cities, I think a 5-kilometre radius from every major CBD, also at all the major airports around Australia, and in also hundreds of regional centres, and by that I mean they consider Parramatta, Port Macquarie, Newcastle. They're all these regional centres around the country where Telstra have already got a 4G footprint, and that footprint is growing. But just back to the device itself, it is a very smart Android device. It's running Android 4.0, but being a HTC device, it's also running HTC Sense user interface as well. So this is offers pretty good speeds in terms of the processor. I think it has this has come down from having a quad core with the One X. This has got a dual core processor, but we found it's still just as fast, just as snappy as the One X. I think one of the reasons why this has got a dual core rather than a quad core processor is that they needed to fit an LTE, which is another long-term evolution, another name for a 4G radio in the device. So there's just the room inside the product. They can only manage a dual core processor. But it turns out I found no difference in the speed between this and the One X. The One XL has got a 4.7-inch screen, high-definition screen, and we found this to be quite a smart product. If you're a person who needs to access content really quickly, either downloading, uploading, browsing the web, the 4G, if you're in a 4G area, you're going to really see those results. Now, on the downside, a couple of little downsides about this product, the battery life. Now, it's a bit of a catch-22 situation. That's the way I described it in my review, was the fact that the more you use 4G, the faster we found that the battery was going to be burned through. Without too much 4G action, a lot of downloading and uploading, we got through a whole workday. But I think one of the uses of having 4G with a device like this is the fact that you want to use the speed of the product to connect. Now, not only can you use it as a smartphone, but you can also use it as a Wi-Fi hotspot. So if we found that using it as a hotspot, they really burn the battery hard. If you are planning on buying this device and using it as a hotspot, our suggestion in the review was to pack your charger with you, because you probably need to connect it by mid-afternoon if you're going to use it as a Wi-Fi hotspot to connect your tablet or your smartphone. So our verdict overall, we gave it 4 stars out of 5. I think it is one of the better Android smartphones on the market, but the battery aside, I think that's not a deal breaker. I think the battery, as long as you've got a charger handy or maybe one in the car, you can easily get away with the HTC One XL. Using the 4G really comes at a price, but on the plus side, it is a big step forward from the original 4G device they offered with the HTC Velocity back earlier in 2012. This offers a lot more style. It's a lot thinner and even faster in terms of the processor speed. So there's a full. If you want to check out the full review, you can head over to techguide.com.au. Our last review this week, this will be a quick one. It's a way we can organize our cables now. The very fact that we've got technology in our homes, whether it's a larger product, even a gadget that we use a charger, the result is a lot of cables. Now, if you could take a look under my desk here at the Tech Guide headquarters, you'll see that I've got a lot of power boards running with 6 and 8 outlets in each one. And the result of that is, while it's handy to have all of the power boards and you can connect multiple products to the one board, the result is an unsightly and cluttered look with all the tangle of cables that are running out of them. Now, a company called 4Cabling has released a product called the Cable Box, a relatively simple product where it is a plastic box that allows you to sit your power board inside. There's two sizes to fit an eight port PowerPoint or a six port board as well. So what happens, you sit the power board inside. The cables then can go out of one of the openings at either end, and then you simply put a lid on top of the product so it hides all those unsightly cables and all that mess. So check it out. There's a story at techguide.com.au. It's for the 4Cabling cable box. So if you want to clean up all of that mess with your cables, this is the way to do it.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
Now, this week we're speaking with McAfee's Michael Sentonas about the DNS changer malware and the so-called internet doomsday. Now, we're recording this on a Monday, so the doomsday has actually passed. The expected day, July the 9th, mid-afternoon here in Australia, it was the time where this malware, the internet doomsday, would have taken effect. Now, let's just look at the backstory here with this story. What happened here was an Estonian crime ring had set up these fake servers and put out this malware called the DNS changer. Now, what the DNS changer did, it infected millions of computers around the world, including reportedly more than 6,000 computers here in Australia. And as its name suggests, it changed the DNS settings on your computer. Now, DNS is short for Domain Name System. And this is the service that translates domain names from words that we recognize, like techguide.com.au, for example. Computer doesn't need those words. That's just for humans to understand it, for easily to remember and type in the system. What the computer does, though, is take the underlying numerical address that goes with that and directs the computer to the appropriate websites. Now, what DNS changer did was it altered those settings and allowed the server to control the sites that the infected computers visited. Now, what this did, this allowed the hackers and cyber criminals to direct them to these fraudulent websites, serve up ads, and attempt to make money. And the FBI has stepped in, and they obtained a court order, by the way, to do this. And then they authorized a complete shutdown of these infected servers, which was due to happen earlier today. And it did take place. The result, though, was the fact that any computer infected with DNS changer malware would no longer be able to access the internet once the servers were shut down. Now, anyone who's had internet security will know they would have been protected. This malware apparently has been out on the internet and it has been aboard some computers for up to 5 years, I've been hearing. So if you were unprotected and this malware was infected, the sites shut down, The server was shut down and you lost your connection to the internet. Now, we speak to Michael in a moment and ask him what the effects are if you have been shut off from the internet. He offers a solution around that. But McAfee, in the meantime, had posted, and I linked this to the story from the story on Tech Guide about the DNS changer there. They had an address, a link that you could check your computer state, whether you were infected, and if you were, there was a way to get rid of it on your computer. So we spoke to Michael Centonius earlier about this, and here is our interview.
Well, hi, Michael. Thanks for joining us. Tell us, do you think this is probably one of the worst viruses or malwares that you've seen?
It's certainly not one of the worst that we've seen. The challenge with this one really is going to be for people that haven't fixed their machines and if they do get cut off from the internet tonight.
Okay, so if that is in fact the case, how do they get around cleaning up their machine if they've been cut off from the internet?
It's still pretty easy. The challenge with this particular Trojan is it changes your DNS settings. And really what that means is if you type in any URL in your browser, you won't be able to go to that site because your computer won't understand what that URL is.
Okay.
You'll basically have to type in the specific domain name with an IP address, and we've got this information publicly available that we can share with your listeners.
Okay. Now, in terms of internet security, this is a classic example of the reason why you actually need internet security, isn't it?
You're absolutely correct. This particular Trojan first surfaced in 2007, and if you think about the challenge being 5 years down the track and people still have this particular issue, it highlights that people simply aren't secured when they're using their PCs at home or in the office.
And what about there's a feeling among Mac users that they seem to have this sort of sense of immunity when it comes to internet security. Can you lay those fears to rest?
Well, we've been saying for quite some time now that Macs are not immune to malware. We've seen a number of examples. Most recently, there was a Trojan called Flashback. And interestingly enough, Apple has removed some of their verbiage on their website where they talk about Macs being free from malware, because certainly that's not the case.
Okay. Now, in terms of this, the Internet Doomsday, this quite a very bold move from these Estonian criminals. This would have taken. Is this a common thing we've seen, or did this take some planning? Like, how common is this sort of malware seen on the internet?
Well, the whole purpose behind DNS changer is really to redirect your traffic through these fake servers. The whole idea behind that is you get these advertisements, and the scammers make money off those paid advertisements. Cybercrime for financial gain is something that we deal with every single day. It's definitely not new. Unfortunately, it is rising at a rapid rate.
What's the difference between the DNS changer, the malware, and what I've heard, botnets? Is there a difference between that? Is that the same thing where they can direct computers around the internet?
Look, it is quite different. DNS changer really is designed to change your DNS settings. And basically, that's your domain name system, and that's what your PC uses to convert user-friendly website names into IP addresses that computers use. Botnets can be used for many different things. Typically, if your machine is compromised, you are then under the control of somebody who owns that particular botnet, and then they can use your machine to do various things, spread additional malware, launch denial-of-service attacks, steal information. So they are a little bit different.
Is the message getting through? Are people getting the message about internet security? Is there still a large number of people who are unprotected?
I think the message is definitely getting out there, and people are starting to think about security. And it's great to hear people start to think about how they should secure their phones and their tablet-type devices. There is a challenge, though. There still is a significant population, part of the population that has no security. So these types of issues are certainly a wake-up call.
No worries. Really appreciate your time. Thank you, Michael.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
We'll kick off this week's Tech Guide Help Desk with a question I'm always being asked. Do I need security, internet security on my Mac? Short answer, yes, you do. Now, there's a lot of people out there who think that, oh, look, I own a Mac. They never get viruses. Why do I need internet software? Well, I've got news for you. Macs do get viruses. In fact, there was one earlier this year called the Flashback malware that actually infected thousands of Macs around the world, including some here in Australia. So that just proves the point that you do need Mac security on your Mac. But the reason this misconception is so widespread and that Mac users are under the false impression that they're not going to be affected by a malware is the fact that, there are most of the viruses, in fact, nearly all the viruses that are out there, malware, are aimed at Windows users. Now, for the sheer reason that Windows users represent 90% of the world's computer population. 90% of the world's computers run Windows. And what do cyber criminals want? Hackers want? They want the largest potential audience. That audience is Windows users. That's why these cyber criminals write code, malware, aimed at Windows users. But that doesn't mean that Mac users can't be affected. I think there was a person on the forum on Tech Guide who asked the question, do I need internet security on my Mac? As I said, you do need to have security running on your Mac. Your device is connected to the internet. Now, it's not just malware that is a potential threat. There could even be potentially dangerous websites that internet security can warn you of before you go onto the site. There's a lot of Mac solutions out there available from all the majors like Norton's, Trend Micro, McAfee, all those companies. There's even a lot of free internet security solutions out there. So I described it to our reader on the forum. I said, look, consider Mac's internet software as the seatbelt in your car. You wear it all the time, but you hope you never need to use it. You hope you never have an accident and need the seatbelt's protection. But it's good to have it on when you're driving anyway. So short answer, yes, you do need internet security on your Mac. Now, here's a question we also get asked quite a bit, especially by Optus customers who want to boost the signal in their homes. Now, Optus several months, in fact, last year, released a product called the Home Zone. There's a full review of this product on Tech Guide. It's actually one of the most clicked stories, one of the most clicked reviews on the Tech Guide website. Now, what the Home Zone does, it connects to your broadband connection and enhances the mobile signal in your home. And what you do, you register your Optus numbers that you want to be recognized by the Home Zone with Optus, and thereby your signal then is slightly boosted in your home to allow you then to make your calls, and it uses your broadband connection to enhance that signal. So what it does, the Home Zone, very handy. If you're in a black spot, you're an Optus customer, Optus obviously offer some of the best value plans out there, which is why people use their mobile as their home phone. They don't even bother having a home phone with an Optus plan. So rather than them switching to another carrier, they might be halfway through a contract, the Home Zone does come in handy. But there is more to this question, though. There are a lot of other listeners and readers of Tech Guide that have asked the question that they need their signal boosting. Now, there are other users out there, especially from companies like Amaysim and Virgin, which also use the Optus network. And the question was, will the Home Zone work for these customers? And the answer is no, it won't. You need to be an Optus customer using the Optus network to register the numbers that you want boosting with this service. Optus obviously want to keep their business within Optus and are not going to give Amaysim, who resell the Optus service at a discount, and Virgin Mobile, which also use the Optus network, they didn't want to give them a free ride into their Optus infrastructure and into the Home Zone, using the Home Zone as well. So bad news for Amaysim customers and Virgin Mobile customers, because they've got some great value deals, but if you've got a weak signal in your home, you're just going to have to put up with it, afraid, because Home Zone only works for true Optus customers and not Amaysim or Virgin. Mm-hmm. Now, another question we've been asked on the Tech Guide forums, and by the way, feel free to join our forum on Tech Guide, and if there is a question that you want answered, that is the source where I go to pick out these questions to read out on the Tech Guide podcast. So feel free to head over to techguide.com.au. On the right-hand side of the menu bar is our forum. Click through there. There's six categories to choose from that cover all the major questions, and you could have your question read out on the Tech Guide podcast by yours truly. But back to our last question of the week is about network drives and the ability to watch content anywhere in your home. Now, this is possible using a network drive, and by its very name, a network drive means it connects to your network. There are several models out there. Western Digital have got a few. Other companies have them as well. And you can distinguish these drives not only by the name on the box, but the fact that they've got an Ethernet connection on the back of the drive, which means they can connect directly to your router and make that drive and its contents part of your network. Now, as we know, smart TVs are on the rise. There's also other ways to access content around your home using your tablets, even your smartphones, using something called DLNA, which is short for Digital Living Network Alliance. And devices that are compatible with this, with DLNA, are things like smart TVs, smartphones, laptops, tablets, and also the network drive. So what you'll find, if you have DLNA enabled on your product, you'll be able to see content on other products in your home, including the network drive. So if you've got a lot of movies stored on there, a lot of music, photos that you want to share, then having them connected to your router then makes that content available to anyone else on the same network. So if you've got, a family with a few laptops, you've got a smart TV, another desktop computer in the house, you can access to the one central drive. You know, one person can upload maybe the latest set of holiday photos or the latest movie they've downloaded, some other pictures, music they've just downloaded and bought, and they can put them on this central drive and then make it accessible to everyone else in the house. So a great way to share content. There are other products. I think Apple TV offers a similar service, but everything sort of runs through through iTunes on your Windows or Apple computer, whether it's movies, music, and videos that you want to access. So that's a great way to share your content. Network drives, Apple TV, a similar thing. But Western Digital have actually released a whole series of new products called the MyNet, the N900, which actually I'm in the middle of reviewing on Tech Guide. You'll hear all about that in the weeks to come. This is a interesting way to not only share your entertainment, but also offers backup because it's got a built-in hard drive. So the MyNet N900, I think, is the top-of-the-range model from Western Digital. But there are other drives that are network-capable, from Western Digital and other companies. So if you want to share the content, that's the best way to do it. And that's our show for this week. It's been great to have your company. We look forward to you joining us again next week. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. See you later.